The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Heinke Digital presents. Damocles. An audiobook podcast by Christian Heinke. Chapter 12. The End. I raised my hands delicately and turned my head to the side. Hubert Sisko was undeniably the one holding the gun and threatening me. A grin plastered across his face. End of line, Lenka. I thought hard, then shook my head apologetically while raising my shoulders. You must have me confused with someone else. Siska's grin widened. Nice try, Lenka. You might be trapped in that rubber doll now, but your brain patterns are unmistakable. You can see brain patterns with your implant? I asked, feigning ignorance. Isn't that a bit above your pay grade as an underpaid law enforcement officer? Siska sighed. Well, cut the crap already, Lenka. I've got a top update on the record now. So do you. He tilted his head, a smug expression on his face. Unlike you, my assistant system has explained all the modes of the upgrade to me. Suddenly, a vividly glowing white sword appeared above me. I stared at it, dumbfounded, struggling to process this information. Siska had access to an upgrade. How was that possible? Finally, it clicked, and I slumped my shoulders. You worked for Sherber, right? Siska remained silent. But why? I pressed, and he frowned. Why? How can you be so stupid and not know the answer to that, Lenka? How much did he pay you? Paid? Nothing. He let me push the damn button on the silver box. The money started bubbling all by itself, thanks to the assistant system I had access to. What favor did you do for him that earned you that privilege? This and that, Siska replied, avoiding my gaze. I exhaled, watching my breath condense in the cold air. You killed Vanessa Goldschmidt. You were the calculated presence in the records at the swimming pool. Sherber didn't like to get his hands dirty. I understood that. And you also kidnapped the girls for Sherber. You killed their mother and made Bridget's murder of Emmanuel Goldschmidt look like an accident. Yes, yes, and yes. However, Bridget is just a machine. Legally speaking, Emmanuel Goldschmidt's death was really nothing more than an accident. And what about the murder of Goldschmidt's wife? Siska shrugged. You can't make an omelet without breaking eggs. You're a corrupt pig, I said. Siska shrugged again. Nowadays, we all have to figure out how to stay afloat. He waved the gun around. Now give me that goddamn box. What do you want with it, Siska? You can only use it once. I know. But the people from whom Sherber borrowed it for his experiments want it back. The rich and powerful, I asked, the Eternals? If you want to call them that. I prefer to think of them as those with the bigger stick, and they always win, he chuckled. They've always had a sword hanging over your head. That's how it's always been, and it always will be. So now? Hand over the silver box. And if I don't? You already know the answer, Lenka. The sword falls, and I'll simply take the silver box from your corpse. You're going to kill me anyway. That's right, Lenka. You're absolutely right. An old man with the body of an Adonis defies nature. So what are you waiting for? If you hand it over willingly, I might consider leaving the girls in the drone limo alone. And who knows? I might even let your damn mutt live. A laugh escaped me as I shook my head in disbelief. You shouldn't have said that, Siska. No one threatens my dog.
Chief Inspector Lenka?
Whispered a voice in my mind. It was Bob. What do you want? I responded, a bit gruffly. I'm a little busy right now.
I know. I was reviewing the various parameters and modes of your upgrade. Apparently, this artificial body received all the data from the upgrade. So, I thought it would be useful to mention that now is the moment to activate shield mode.
I have a shield mode?
Yes, you do.
What's it going to be, Lenka? Should I start with the drone limo or with you? No, I exclaimed to Siska, raising my hands in an attempt to calm the situation. I'll give it to you. Yes, Bob, but wait for my signal. I slowly began to take off my shoulder bag and unzip it, feeling around for the silver box. Siska aimed the pistol at me again. I have X-ray vision now, too, thanks to the upgrade, Lenka. So don't even think about reaching for the pistol. I lowered my head. Okay, at least I had to try, right? Cut the chatter, Lenka. Hand me that box now. My fingers closed around the box. I pulled it out and handed it to Siska. He glanced at the box, then smiled at me. It was nice doing business with you, Lenka. Suddenly, I heard a noise that resembled rusty scissors slicing through taut horsehair. Bob, now! I called out in my mind. I looked up just in time to see the glowing sword above my head whiz down. But before it could strike me, a bright shield formed above me. The shield spread out like ripples in a pond after a stone is thrown. The tip of the sword hit the shield first, creating a metallic sound akin to a gong. Then the sword bounced off, spun around its center of gravity, and landed tip first in the grass in front of me. Siska's eyes widened in surprise as he raised his arm with the pistol. In an instant, I rushed forward. With careful precision, I grasped the hilt of the sword. Although it was just an image in augmented reality, it felt weighty, tangible, and oddly comforting. I pulled it from the grass inch by inch as Siska prepared to pull the trigger. I couldn't shake the thought of that ridiculous joke about someone showing up to a gunfight with a knife. I felt doomed, but I couldn't afford to lose. Just as Siska was about to fire, I thrust the sword forward. It pierced through his chest effortlessly, as if he were made of butter. I drove it all the way to the hilt, then let it go. Siska stared in disbelief at the glistening sword embedded in his chest. His arm holding the pistol dropped weakly, and the weapon fell into the grass. He glanced at the silver box still in his other hand before looking at me, confusion evident on his face as if he couldn't comprehend how someone my age could have struck him. Then his knees buckled and he collapsed face first in front of me, like a tree being felled. The silver box rolled from his slackened grip. For a brief moment, the sword protruded from his back, resembling a long, thin index finger pointing accusingly. Then it began to flicker and blur into coarse pixels, before dissolving into nothing. I knelt beside Siska and felt for a pulse. He was dead. I took the silver box back. It was damp with dew, and I stuffed it into my shoulder bag. Bob?
Yes, Chief Inspector?
That was a great tip about the shield, thank you.
You're welcome.
Can you contact Vincent in the drone limo?
I can.
Please tell him to land. The sleek drone limousine descended gracefully beside me. The hatch opened, and Sam leaped out, tail wagging, and ran toward me. I knelt down to embrace her as she licked my hand and face, unmistakably recognizing me. Vincent's concerns had proven unfounded, as I had anticipated. If Sam could accept my new body, perhaps I could too. I stood up, finding it significantly easier than before. Vincent was at the controls of the drone, his gaze fixed on me.
How would you like to proceed now, Chief Inspector?
He asked. I peered into the cabin. The two girls were still unconscious. I want you to fly the girls to a hospital. After that, you can return to scanning your books. Vincent was silent for a moment before agreeing to my instructions. His gaze shifted to the female android lying on the cabin floor.
And what do you want done with her, Chief Inspector?
I'll take care of her, I replied, carefully lifting the stiff body of the female android out of the drone and placing it on the grass. Sam sniffed at her curiously. I then turned my attention back to Vincent.
Is it time to say goodbye, Chief Inspector?
He asked. I suppose that's what it means, I said, gently patting Vincent's head. Goodbye, Vincent. Simon would be proud of you.
Of course he would be,
the robot replied nonchalantly. Then the hatch closed, and the drone's engines roared to life. Dust and grass swirled around as it swiftly ascended, heading toward the hospital. Sam and I watched it disappear, and then I knelt down to pick up the android body once more. Come on, Sam, I said. Let's go home. The walk to my apartment was a brief 15 minutes, even with the added challenge of carrying an unconscious female android. Despite it being the middle of the night, I encountered no one as I crossed Dorston Street with her in my arms. Even if I had, I doubted anyone would have made a fuss. People here were different. With Bob's assistance, I convinced the staff at my apartment building to let me in, despite my altered appearance. I managed to do the same at my apartment door. Once inside, I instructed the computer to turn on the lights. I then carried the android into the bathroom and positioned her in front of the bathtub. Carefully, I cut away her dusty, brittle clothing. After filling the tub with warm water, I bathed her from head to toe. At that moment, it didn't feel strange. It was an act of care, not something intimate. Once she was clean, I lifted her out of the tub and wrapped her in a large bath sheet that I had set aside. I carried her to my bed and laid her down. Afterward, I removed my soiled underwear and enjoyed a warm shower for 10 minutes. I dried off and changed into clean clothes, though they didn't quite fit. My old pants were too short and too loose, and my shirts were too small. Eventually, I found an old police tracksuit in the back of the closet that I could somewhat fit into, despite my new stature. I fed Sam and gave her something to drink. Finally, I was ready. It was time to awaken the Sleeping Beauty from her slumber. I stepped into the hallway and retrieved the silver box from my backpack before returning to the bedroom. The female android's body shimmered in the light filtering through the street lamp-lit curtains. I opened the silver box and placed it on her stomach. Her body began to emit a bluish glow once more, reminiscent of gentle fireflies. The light spread in undulating waves over her skin, creating a play of varying brightness. It then concentrated on her forehead, just as it had in the doll room what felt like an eternity ago, alternating between brightening and dimming. The rhythmic, lifelike glow pierced through my thoughts, eventually gathering at the center of her body, where the silver box rested. Once again, the box briefly illuminated, signaling that the ritual was complete. The silver box began to move. The android's chest started to rise and fall. I removed the box from her belly. Her hands trembled, her eyelids twitched, and then her eyes snapped open. Suddenly, she shot forward, seized my wrist, and with a swift motion sat up, grasping my throat tightly. Anger flashed in the android's eyes as she stared into mine, growling something in Arabic, a threatening tone that my android brain couldn't translate. "Siv," I croaked, "it's me, Joseph." Gradually, her gaze softened, and her eyes transformed into the familiar ones I knew so well. The grip around my throat loosened. "Joseph," Siv asked softly, "are you really in there?" I nodded, brushing a strand of hair from her face. "And how about you? You've got quite a grip there, girl." Siv's expression turned sad. This body belonged to Zohara. She was a brave warrior who fought countless battles against the Eternals, until they captured her and erased her memories. I caught a few fragments of her life during the transmission. One of ours had betrayed them, which likely explains the violent reaction to your appearance. She regarded me as I sat beside her on the bed. "Nice outfit. Want to go for a jog?" she asked mockingly. "I can't fit into my clothes anymore. This was the best I could find." Siv glanced down at herself. "And what about me?" I smiled. "I wanted to order something for you, but I haven't had the chance yet. Besides, I like you just the way you are right now." "Is that so?" she asked. I nodded in response. "Do you know how our species shares the life energy it has collected with one another?" she continued. "No, I don't. This is my first time in an android's body." "Then let me show you, Joseph Lenka." She leaned in and whispered into my ear before unzipping my tracksuit and pulling me onto the bed. I had once shared a bed with Siv, but only in a dream. This experience was entirely different. I felt reserved and protective, but Siv quickly eased my hesitations. It was my first moment of intimacy with a woman since my wife's passing. People often compare such experiences to riding a bicycle, but it was nothing like that. Each person brings a unique dynamic to the encounter. Moreover, there was no love between Siv and me. Our connection was fueled by attraction and a mutual need for comfort, rooted in the despair of being left behind. As we reached our shared peaks, fragmented memories surged through us. We were transported to epic battles amidst towering dunes, formidable glaciers, and foreboding forests. So much wisdom and insight had been lost, yet life persisted. It had to continue. We agreed to carry on, sealing our pact in that moment. When I woke up again, I found myself alone. I glanced at my Apple Watch, only to see that its charge was nearly 0%. I'd forgotten to charge it. I removed the watch and set it on the nightstand, realizing it no longer mattered. Bob, now residing in my mind, could always tell me the time. As I rose and surveyed the room, I discovered that Siv had vanished. Sam, our loyal companion, approached me. I affectionately scratched her behind the ear, and she looked up at me expectantly. Understanding that look, I knew I had to take her for a walk immediately. First, I hurriedly showered and slipped into my tracksuit again, as I had no other clothing options. I took a brief stroll around the block with Sam, and then bought some breakfast from the Amazon vending machine on Dorstener Street, which had replaced the kiosk that used to be there. It seemed my artificial body could also process human food. Bob explored the internal databases of my new body and discovered that it could sustain itself with human food. However, adopting a strictly human diet would lead to the same fate as the androids whose bodies Siv and I now inhabited. It would drain my life energy, leaving me as lifeless as the drumming toy rabbit in the battery commercial. When I returned home, Sam was eating something from a can while I enjoyed croissants and an espresso for breakfast. I deliberately avoided the news, planning to catch up on it later. As I leaned against an empty coffee cup, I noticed an envelope containing a letter. The envelope, written in elegant handwriting, was addressed to Joseph. I paused, contemplating what to do with it. "Well, letters addressed to you should be read, old friend," Simon's voice echoed in my mind. "I know, Simon," I murmured quietly in the stillness of my small kitchen. "I know." Instead, I ordered a new outfit that arrived via drone in just 30 minutes. It was essentially the same style I always wore, but updated to complement my new appearance. After putting it on and glancing at my reflection in the hallway mirror, I realized that the disheveled detective look suited my new self far better than my old one. Rather than heading to West Park out of habit, I chose to call for a drone limousine. I decided to forego city buses for the time being. The limousine whisked me to the rocket flight terminal in Frankfurt in under an hour. Above the clouds, the sun shone brightly once more, though snow was predicted for Frankfurt later in the day. I asked Bob to play some music in the limo. A song by the sadly departed singer Imari Birch seemed fitting for my mood.
Time to break these chains. Your heart holds the key. Just set both our souls free. Set down.
I took the envelope from the inside pocket of my jacket and opened it.
Dear Joseph, I hope you understand why I couldn't stay with you longer. It's for the best. Survivors like us often keep our distance, though we occasionally come together to share memories and energy. This has always been our way. One day I will tell you more about our species, beginning with our birthplace, the beautiful city of New Orleans. You would have loved it. You will have many questions about our kind, especially since you are a police officer. I recommend reaching out to an old friend, Michael Holborn. He can answer many of your questions. Once a police officer like you, he is now a professor of philosophy and artificial intelligence at Oxford. The political situation in former Great Britain remains delicate, but I believe you are someone who isn't easily intimidated, not even by death. I'm confident you'll find a way to get there, especially now that you have Bob's support and your financial situation has improved. I also want you to know that I've taken back the silver box. I still hope to find another lost survivor who can temporarily call it home, just as you and I did. Hopefully, we will meet again. If you see Holborn, please send him my warmest regards. It's been over 10 years since we last met. But remember, time, something you will soon experience, is now in endless supply for you. I look forward to seeing you again. Thank you for everything, Chief Inspector. Sif.
I folded the letter and tucked it away. The drone descended through the low-hanging clouds, revealing the towering skyscrapers of Frankfurt's banking district. As we dropped below the cloud cover, snowflakes began to swirl around us. The drone landed at the rocket launch pad along the Rhine, where intercontinental missiles were lined up like tin soldiers, some taking off and landing every minute. While there was no direct flight to Oxford, a first-class rocket to London was still available. Thanks to my newfound financial freedom, taking Sam with me would be no problem at all. At the launch terminal for my flight to London, a striking flight attendant greeted me. The first-class tickets for Sam and me cost about as much as my earnings for half a year as a policeman. He who has will be given. The flight attendant guided me to my seat. As the rocket soared into the sky, I and the other passengers were pressed back into our seats. Within minutes, we were in orbit. In about 20 minutes, we would be landing back in London. I glanced around at the other passengers and asked Bob to activate the Damocles mode. I watched the forest of swords spinning lazily above my fellow travelers. No one should wield such power, I thought. Perhaps now I could do something about the abuse of that power. I had Bob turn the mode off again. The flight attendant approached me with a smile, and it took me a moment to realize she was interested in me. It had been a long time since an attractive woman had looked at me that way. I smiled back politely. I had lost much in the past few days, but I had also gained a great deal. I needed to learn how to navigate this new body and its abilities. Besides, I was no longer alone. Bob was connected to my spirit. I had transformed into something I had only seen in comic books as a child. A significant responsibility had been bestowed upon me, and I needed to manage it wisely. Whether I would succeed remained uncertain. The future lay ahead of me.
The End. Bochum, November 2017.
In the neon haze, city lights chasing shadows in the sleepless nights, climbing ladders made of gold, never heeding stories old. There's a sword above my head, hanging by a fragile thread. Fate is calling out to me. From its grip, can I break free? Oh, the higher that we soar, the more we fear the fall. In the shadow of that play, we realize we're already dead. There's a sword above my head, hanging by a fragile thread. In this game of chance we play, will the thread hold or give way? In the end we all will see what it means to be. Underneath the sword we choose, that's the fate we can't refuse.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Heinke Digital Audiobook Podcasts and its author, Christian Heinke, please visit heinke.digital.
The sky, but baby, can't you see?